You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News. And joining me on the other line for not our weekly show, we're changing it up a bit this week, talking some Jazz beat the Pacers, and some state of the Pacers, because the Pacers are 500, kind of an alarming record given their talent level, their goals for this year. So we gotta talk about this team. Joining me, Adam Friedman. Adam, first of all, how's it going?
Good. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. We're recording this 2 hours before the big game.
Yeah, I am excited to watch none of it. It's going to be very fun for me to do something else.
So can we real quick, I think we should pump the brakes on like the expectation thing, I guess, if that makes sense. Because if you told me before the season this team was the fifth seed in the East, I would have been fine with that. That would have been above what I thought. So I know what you mean by like they could be higher. They maybe should be, you know, 15 and 10 and not 12 and 12. But like just beginning of the season expectations, they're actually above where they were. It helps that some of the other East teams.
I was gonna say, I don't know if that's great. I don't think that's they're playing well, and more that the Raptors and the Heat have been bad.
Well, and the Raptors are storming up. I mean, they've made it. They'll probably be a top five team by, you know, the end of next two, in about 2 weeks.
And the Hawks have also not been as good as everybody thought, right?
So yeah, the Heat. I don't know. The Heat have been so devastated by coronavirus stuff, and they've just been kind of aim when they are. So who knows with them?
So the Jazz just beat the Pacers. Honestly, after struggling on defense for a while, this was the Pacers' best defensive game in a while, probably since the first game in Charlotte, I would say. But they just couldn't put anything together on offense. They had their third worst three-point shooting game of the season, shot 8 for 29. By the way, I mean, surprisingly low threes, again, 29. That preseason expectation of high threes has not maintained the season. But really, this game, they just could not get it going at the rim. They shot under 40%. They a few times tried to post up Sabonis on Gobert. That didn't work. They tried to ISO on Gobert on switches with Brogdon. That didn't work. Turns out Rudy Gobert is incredible. And they even had to just some open shots that they just missed. Pretty ugly scoring game. And credit the Jazz defense. The Jazz defense is very good. But truly in a game where they did a great job making the Jazz miss from everywhere, they couldn't get a rebound and they couldn't make a shot. And they lost a game that they needed to win. So pretty rough one considering the circumstances of actually defending the red hot Jazz.
Well, and it hurts worse than Mike Conley, who is not their best player, but is
all-star level this year.
Yeah. I mean, one of their three or four best players, and sometimes even one of the best players on some nights for this Jazz team didn't play. So it was kind of a gift in some ways, right? They've had that happen a couple of times, right? They lost to the Lowry-less Raptors two Sundays ago. Now we could say a Sunday game, weekend game, pitchers never win. So we should have known this coming in, but no, they were given kind of a gift in my Conley not playing, and they couldn't take advantage of it. And that's what hurts the most, because they should have won Friday. I mean, they really should have, but they had a shot that should have gone in if, you know, I don't know, Turner 6'11 for going against what's Lonzo Ball 6'5.
The Pacers sucked for three quarters on Friday. They absolutely should not have won that game.
Yeah, but if you look at the last 30 seconds, you would take 6'11 Turner going against 6'5 Lonzo Ball and scoring probably most of the time, I would say.
I guess.
Just straight up. I mean, I would think that, especially the way he was playing in that fourth quarter, he thought he might be able to get that shot to fall. Wednesday, they weren't going to win that game. They got blown out. They got smoked. Tuesday, they didn't manage to win. So, I mean, the week should have been probably a 2-2 week, and them going 1-3 is disappointing.
I agree.
Most of the way, but yeah, I mean, this game, another game I feel like they should have maybe had it, I guess. I don't know. I mean, they were close pretty much for, 2.5 quarters, and then kind of got away from the end of the third and the fourth. So, but it just felt like they should have had the opportunity to at least be in this game at the end of it with, like, a shot to win.
And they really it's won. Weird, and I was thinking this, but I think Jay Michael's headline was the one that I was thinking about. But it seems like their successes and failures are very reflexive, where, like, every game – they'll like improve on something that they sucked at in the last game, right? In this game, their defense was a lot better. They were really rotating to shooters, but then their rebounding drops a ton, right? Like they can't put it all together recently. It's like something comes up, like they figure out how to get another cutter involved to solve this problem, or they get this guy that is struggling going, right? Like McDermott was good again in this Jazz game. I feel like he always does well against the Jazz. You know, they get something going, but then in response, something else. Like I said, the rebounding was a struggle and they didn't get enough shots for Justin Holiday. Jeremy Lamb only took six shots. Like the balance seems like it seems like they play almost a different style a lot. And not that that's bad. They're kind of playing a different opponent every game, right? But it can't be so much that you adjust to something that you lose so much somewhere else. And I think that's been killing them in this game. And in this Jazz game in particular, the Jazz are not like they're a good rebounding team. Gobert's a good rebounder, but they had 17 offensive rebounds. Five were Mitchell. He's a guard. Two were Ingles. He's a guard. Three were Jordan Clarkson. He's a guard, right? So that's 10 of them from guards. And I know that they've been terrible at offensive rebounds, giving up offensive rebounds all season. Seems like more of them have been guards' faults than the center's faults. I know we harp on Sabonis, another non-double-double game. He only had 9 rebounds, right? So it's not even the center so much. I just wanted to highlight that he didn't have a double-double.
Mitchell had at least 2 times where he drove in, missed a shot, and got his own rebound. I mean, that's yeah. kind of ridiculous. I mean, that, yep. especially when you play 2 centers, which they did most of the night. Like, that right. like just shouldn't happen.
I don't even want to get on the centers necessarily. I mean, yeah, they're not like – neither of them had an awesome rebounding game. But most of the time, I think, when they're giving up these offensive rebounds, it's been a guard problem. But anyway, that was a lot of words to say. They keep like improving one thing and losing another, and it's just giving them not good enough performances over and over.
Well, the problem right now with this team is they plug, like you said, they plug one hole and another one appears because they don't have more than, I want to say, 7 really like solid players, right? I think Goga's getting better and is working through some kinks in his, you know, second year game, and that's what you expect. Aaron Holiday has been terrible. I mean, he's had some flashes, but most of the games has been, you know, subpar. And because they don't have their 3rd, 4th best player, maybe even sometimes it would be their 1st and 2nd best player, it's like they can only fix so many holes. And there's like, let's say there's 10 problems. They can only plug 6 of them, and they just plug 6 different ones each night because they don't have enough players to actually fix all 10 problems.
Right. Yeah, it's been a struggle, and this Jazz game really highlighted some of their bigger issues. So like what I feel like is going to happen, they'll play the Nets on Wednesday. And we, by the way, we are changing the schedule this week. We'll do our weekly show previewing the week tomorrow with both of us still and cover more Pacer stuff. But, you know, probably against the Nets, they'll have a good rebounding game, right? But what are they going to give up instead, right? What hole is going to open up? And, yeah, injuries are a big factor. But in this Jazz game, I just think we saw it again where they and that in turn, because they're struggling in some area every game, they can't get a run going, right? That's something I've texted you and harped on a lot this season. I didn't text you that today, but earlier in the season is, yeah. like, the Pacers don't have big runs anymore. They kind of did in the 4th quarter against the Pelicans. Even then, when they hit a franchise record 3s, they never had, like a 10-0 run or anything crazy, right? They just kind of slowly chipped at it. They never have a big run anymore. It's super strange, and I can't explain it. This team just isn't playing very well right now. And I know injuries are a factor, but they're just really not playing well right now.
I think the explanation for that is their 2 best scorers are not like guys who just like go for 10 points in 5 minutes. That means yeah. they're like Vic, right? Vic had go 11 points in 3 minutes, or even somebody like TJ Warren, right? TJ Warren would have those runs where, you know, he just couldn't miss for like 4 or 5 straight shots, and he could do it, you know, right. close out a quarter. We saw that when his one good game he played this year before he got hurt, where he had, you know, like 15 points in a 3rd quarter, something crazy like that. They just don't have that player. It's maybe McDermott, but it's like if a defense tries to, they can slow him down enough or force him into too many tough shots that he can't get on a run. And then Brogdon and Sabonis are good, kind of like consistently there to score, but they're not like, you don't expect Brogdon to hit 3 straight 3s, something like that. Right. Maybe Lamb can. I mean, he's the one who maybe too, but again, they
only shot 6 times today.
Yeah. So they just don't have that, like, that one guy. And I think, I mean, that's what they think they thought they would get in Caris LeVert, a guy who, remember, he scored 40 points like 2 games before he got traded, like a guy who could just at some moment go for 15 and a quarter. And they just don't have that right now. Yep. And that's part of the struggle, is they can't get a run, and then it just spirals and whatnot. And then
someone to relieve the pressure of the 2-man game, basically.
Yeah. Well, and then the problem they get into is they're playing Brogdon 35 minutes, Sabonis 36, and they get in these close games the last 4 or 5 minutes, and those guys are gassed, and you can see yep. it, and their shots are short on everything, and they're kind of taking tougher shots and stuff like that. And it's a spiraling effect. They don't, you know, they need that like one offensive player who can pop. This reminds me very much of like the kind of 2018-19 team when Vic went down, and it was kind of like, you know, Bojan was playing pretty well, but he was kind of it. And, you know, he's that way too, where he's not necessarily somebody who like all the time can get 15 points in a quarter. He can occasionally. I mean, he's more than some of the guys right now. We've seen that, you know, with the game against the Cavs and the playoff a couple years ago, but like they just didn't have enough offensive firepower at that point. They kept, you know, they had one guy who could really do it. And it's the same issue now where they don't really have more than like 1 or 2 guys who can kind of do it versus like, you know, when they got the point of getting Warren was to add a luxury to have like just third guy who was like an amazing scorer who, like, when things were falling apart, could just go off and get you 10 points and keep you alive.
Yeah, absolutely. They've really struggled with that. And their two best offensive players aren't necessarily awesome self-creators, right? So they don't really – like, those guys kind of rely on the flow of the game to get them really going. And when the flow of the game is not in the Pacers' favor, they can't get going. So let's talk about the state of this team in general. This Jazz – I mean, we kind of just mended that with this Jazz game. They are 12-12. It's exactly a third of the season, and they're 12-12. So let's get to that. But first, I want to talk about 1010, because this episode is brought to you by 1010. You may have read about them in New York Times, Style Magazine, Forbes, wherever. We're excited to tell you about it here on Locked On Pacers. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana. 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com, and when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check it out. Again, this exciting limited time collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. Okay, Adam, the Pacers are 12-12. They're still fifth in the East. And I'm actually getting asked a few times if they're going to make the playoffs, which seems kind of extreme, right? To even make the play-in, they have to win like 40% of their games this year. Like, they're going to do that. They have that. They haven't even played any of the cupcake teams yet. They haven't played the Wizards. They haven't played the Pistons. They haven't played the Timberwolves. They haven't played the Thunder.
It's so weird. They played the Pistons like four times in a month last year. They haven't played them once yet.
I know. And the Pistons just traded Derrick Rose, another one of their good players. They're even worse than their record now, right? They haven't played the cupcake teams yet. Like, the outside of the Magic, I think they have – the Magic are the only single-digit win team they've played this season. Oh, and the Bulls.
Oh, okay. So that's better. There's some rack-up wins there.
Their upcoming schedule after the Nets game is somewhat easier, right? So that plus, look, they have two massive injuries in their starting lineup. Probably their two best off-the-dribble self-creators on the entire roster, right? Like, no offense to Jeremy Lin and Brogdon, who can both do it, but, like, LeVert getting into the lane and hitting a floater, he's super good at it. He's actually a decent passer now, too. We all know what TJ Warren is, right? Like, okay, I understand why they're 12-12 and falling to 40% wins. They're going to make the playoffs. Like, things are fine, but it just – things feel off. Like, they have a rough – even playing these games against Philly without Embiid and the Jazz without Conley, they can only beat Memphis this week. Like, things just feel kind of off, and it's kind of a weird spot for the team right now.
Yeah. I think we did this last week, right? This team is just very average. And the one thing they're benefiting from right now is that instead of the East being kind of a 6 or 7 team tier league, it's kind of a 4-team tier league.
Yep.
Or conference, not league, I guess. Right. Like, clearly Boston, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, and Philadelphia are the four best teams in the conference. Boston, though, has fallen a little bit, but I think they didn't have Tatum for 2 weeks and they still managed to win a lot of games. So I would give them a little bit of time to sort of
looking forward to our podcast in 2.5 months discussing which of those four teams the Pacers should try to play in the first round.
Yeah, but clearly those four teams are kind of in a class of their own right now. The Pacers had their chance to be on the class. They could have beaten Philly, give them a game up. They had a couple other wins that would have added up to that. And then there's kind of this next tier of teams when you want to call from like five to basically from the Pacers down to the Miami Heat.
Five and six. And then I think it's another tier.
Think so? Well, see, I think the Raptors and Heat are on the Pacers tier. I just will the wins get there eventually.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's all I mean. And so it feels like they benefit from that in the sense that I think they were going to be the 7th seed when the year started. Now I'd be surprised if they fall a 7 unless the Heat have some great run like here. Right. But it feels like they're going to be a top 6 seed, which is a good thing because that means they avoid that play-in thing, and that's a big deal. And they could end up, you know, maybe getting like a Boston instead of a Nets or Bucks in the first round, which would be also, you know, the better of the matchups. Not that it'd be that great, but the team is just like is just very kind of average this year, and it's where they've really been in the past, right? They've been the 5 seed or the 4-5 game for what 4 years in a row now, and they're still there right now. And so we were talking about before the podcast, like the team is probably no better than it would be under Nate McMillan, but Bjorken's not getting as much crap yet because new coach and more
injuries.
But injuries, Millen had injuries too. True. Vic got hurt. I mean, except for that 1 year, they were really healthy. That was their best year under him, and they were really good that year. Everybody's healthy. He's had, you know, Vic in and out of the lineup. He had Sabonis hurt last year in the playoffs. He had Turner in and out a whole year. I mean, he's had all kinds of injuries too. I mean, it's been a staple of this franchise.
Yeah, Bjorken gets time to implement a system. I'm not putting any critique on him right now.
It's too early, but the team is no better with him right now than it would be with Millen, in my opinion.
Record-wise, I think I'm with you there.
Yeah, record-wise. Other things maybe.
Lock for the playoffs. And yeah, again, I think like the 7 seed is probably going to end up, I mean, maybe Heat Raptors get up there, but they're probably going to end up like a 500 team or like a barely over 500 team, right? So Pacers can get in that range easily, even with these injuries. But it's just been a strange time where, and this is something else we've talked about a lot. It seems like every game, either one, Brogdon and Sabonis have a good game and they can't get enough from one of the other guys. Like, do they just need one of them to have a nice game and they don't get it? Or all the other guys finally like click and are doing well. And like this game today, for example, and Sabonis and Brogdon really struggle. Like, you look at their just raw stats. They had 35 points combined. Yeah. But I mean, Sabonis had 20 points on 19 shots. Brogdon had 15 on 20 shots, right? They were really not awesome. Whereas Turner had 11 on 7 shots. Lamb had 10 on 6 shots. Justin Holiday had a great defensive game. Justin Holiday, second highest plus minus on the team today. And he played with the starters a lot. He also played with the bench a lot, but you know, those guys all had nice games. McDermott had a really nice game, and they just didn't get enough from the stars this time, right? It's always one or the other. It's really strange that something about the way they're playing doesn't allow that all to jive all the time. Maybe that just – and I think that goes back to what you just said, though. When they get Bjorkman's system fully down, I think that will help. And he's really a defensive coach. I know people want to box him in as an offensive coach, but even McDermott said today, you know, I've never had a coach that works just on defense more than Bjorkman does. I think everything will come around with time, and it'll help in that way. But yeah, once all that stuff jives, I think it'll be better with the new system and all those guys kind of understanding each other better. And I think that will help as well. But they really just haven't been able to put together complete games for like a month.
Well, and they're stuck in this limbo where both the guys they have out are indefinitely out. There's no time.
Yeah.
To be able to. So it's not like we're thinking, oh, April, we'll see one or two of them back, which we might think that subconsciously, but there's no, we don't know for sure. Then we're thinking, how do we get to that point, right? Like, that would always been the thing with Vic last year, right? It was before the pandemic. It was like, how do we get to January just being a decent team? And then Vic comes back, get him kind of come with the next 2 months and make a playoff run. We don't have that thought right now, right? Like, if you told me they'd be 100% healthy by the playoffs, I might give them more of a shot against a first round playoff team than right now, right? Even if their record is not great, right? But like, because I do think what we saw at the beginning of the year when they were healthy, they are somewhat as good as Boston. I mean, they played them really well this year now, right?
Warren played in that game too.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think the Nets and Milwaukee are tiers ahead, but I could see the Nets having some weird playoff run because of they're all new and they're all offense and, you know, some weird series or whatnot. So, the problem is we just don't know what the injuries are. They going to be back by playoff time? We don't have an
expectation. LeVert will be, but Warren, I have no idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, we don't have the timeline. We don't know for sure. You and I are just speculating that. And that's what's weird about this is like a lot of teams, like even like McCollum, who hurt his foot and had, I think, a minor surgery on it. There's a timeline in place where Portland's thinking, well, we just got to kind of stay afloat until this point, and then we'll get McCollum back, maybe make a run kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, can I suggest one more thing to you, a lineup change that I think will help a lot?
Yeah, what do you think?
If I am Nate Bjorkman, and obviously he's much smarter basketball mind than me, I would start Doug McDermott instead of Justin Holiday.
I'm thinking that too. I think
Holiday's his brother. I think what I just said, what I talked about earlier is they either get it from the two stars or the other guys. And I think even though he's not a self-creator, McDermott, I think that the him and Sabonis two-man game is so solid enough that adding that extra dimension of offense to the starting five when they're stagnant like today, right? When they're really hammering the stars and it's not working, being able to hammer one star and have a dynamic play where it's just the him and the McDermott two-man game would help the starters enough. And Justin's shooting better from three than McDermott this year. So they'd get the shooting with the bench still. Holiday can still play with the starters, right? They still bring in McDermott first sub. So I think they'd still get about the same output from those two guys and just get better fits with both units. Justin's been a good fit with the starters, don't get me wrong. But I think McDermott should start Holiday to the bench. I think that would help both units and make them a little bit more spread out with their talent and plug some of the holes. But that's just what I would do. We'll see what happens.
So I agree with you. I was actually looking at I was pulling up the lineup stats for the team. I think the biggest beneficiary of Holiday to the bench would be his brother, Aaron. I think so. They're right now the second in team in net rating. When you look at, they're at a plus 13 net rating in 240 minutes. So
the Aaron Justin duo is, that's funny.
Yeah. I think there is something about them playing together that boosts Aaron Holiday. I don't know if it's playing with his brother makes him more accountable in some ways or makes him feel like he can give it up more because he'll get it back. I don't know what it is, but I think when he's out there with Justin, it kind of like steadies him. And that's the thing that's missing. I think ultimately we kind of go from 1 through 9. If Aaron Holiday was playing like he was last year, this team would have won 2 or 3 more games by now.
That's true.
That's kind of like he's kind of
basically all of their one possession games.
Exactly. He is that little critical piece where if he had made the improvement that we thought he was going to make this year, which it's only been a third through. So if he can finish the last two thirds strong, he'll have definitely kind of change that narrative. Yeah. But well, if the next 2 months he comes out and plays next two thirds of the season, he plays really, really well, he'll kind of flip that narrative a little bit. Like kind of the way he did last year, where in the bubble, he played pretty well, where we thought he's kind of starting to make this kind of turn. He played good in the playoffs and whatnot. So I think his Aaron will benefit from Justin being on the bench, and you can still close with Justin if you need to, because that's really what matters is, you know, if in the defense includes him. I think you're right. McDermott and Sabonis offensive start helps, and I think it helps the second unit by putting the Holiday together with McConnell.
Right. Okay, I want to talk about a player that I think has been the most important to the Pacers' wins and losses ratio since the Depot trade, and that's Malcolm Brogdon. And I think that the recent struggles, he's a big factor in. So let's do that. But first, we're taking one more break. And first of all, let's talk about the official betting sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network, betonline.ag, because once again, Super Bowl is today. I hope you got your bets in on there. They've got everything there. But, you know, their lines have been solid at 3.5-3 for the Chiefs favored. We'll see what happens. They've also got NBA on there, college basketball, whatever you're into. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust to get in on the action. Betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account. Use the promo code Locked On. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus. Again, college basketball in full swing. You can bet on the Hoosiers who beat Iowa today. You know, maybe they'll make a run at the tournament game by game. The Pacers, of course, having trouble covering the spread recently, but always fun to get in on the action with the Pacers. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Use the promo code Locked On for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And, of course, got to talk to you guys about Built Bar. They just had a new flavor. It's coconut brownie chunk, and it is so good. I got a package of those myself, and I've been really enjoying them. But Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bars ever. They're 100% covered in chocolate protein bars that come in, I think, 19 flavors now. They're all soft and easy to chew. Some of the awesome flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, peanut butter, that coconut brownie chunk I just mentioned. You got to check them out. They're delicious. They're great for staying healthy. They're, again, 100% covered in chocolate. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. If you're on a keto diet, they're perfect. Go check them out. BuiltBar.com, promo code Locked On. When you check out, you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, that promo code is Locked On, all one word, 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, so let's talk Malcolm Brogdon. I'm going to throw a stat at you if you are ready.
I'm ready.
Since the Depot trade became official, so after they beat Portland, I think it was the Saturday after they beat Portland, the Pacers are 4-8. First of all, yuck. 4-5, 4-8.
Whether it was a good trade or not.
Well, trading a guy who can play in games for you for a guy who can't play in games for you turns out it's not necessarily good for your short-term.
It has to be a negative.
Yeah, it turns out that's not really helpful for the short-term success of your team. But anyway, Brogdon has shot over 50% three times since that trade, okay? Three times. All Pacers wins, all three of those games, okay? They only have one win when he didn't shoot over 50%. That was the Magic game that they stole in overtime. Every other game that he shot under 50% in that stretch, they've lost, okay? Pre-Depot trade, first game through the Trailblazers game, Brogdon was 48% from the field, 46% from deep, and 88% free throws. Fantastic. That's when he was really in my all-star discussion. Since the Depot trade, 42% from the field, 34% from three, and 90% from the free throw line. Okay. So one, I think that this kind of goes back to what we said about LeVert and Warren. Having that off the stars scorer who can really light it up and get your team on a run and get some buckets in a few possessions. They had that with Depot, and he was playing pretty well to start the season, to be honest. Not having him has hurt Brogdon and Sabonis. It allows defenses to throw more attention to them. Two, Brogdon is playing and finishing shots at a significantly lower level since the trade, and it's really hurting the team. In games where he shoots well, they win. Like, duh, scoring more points is good. But I think that you can really see the value he has on this team when you check out the stats, and he needs to step up a little bit for this team to get back on track.
Yeah, he – I'm trying to figure out a way to put this. Like, he needs – the reason the team was so successful last year with him and without Oladipo is because of he had that other guy. He wasn't always the offensive guy. He was able to sort of be the almost the number two in offense around Warren, right? Warren was the focal point of the offense. Sabonis in some ways too, a little bit, but like Warren was the like kind of go-to scorer when they needed a bucket at times. And maybe Brogdon at the end of a game came up because Warren wasn't the best clutch player. But he doesn't have that this year. And so he's sort of forcing things, it feels like, at times, right? I mean, we saw tonight against Gobert, I don't know how many times he tried to go one-on-one at Gobert and get swatted at the rim or get a shot, you know, put off. He can't make a left-handed layup right now, it feels like, too. I don't know if he's noticed that also. But he just isn't quite the 1A of a player, right? He's kind of a really good 1B, clearly. And so is like Sabonis in the same way. Is a really good 1B. They just need that kind of 1A offensive player right now.
Yeah, and Brogdon is definitely a B creator, right? He's the perfect secondary guy for every title team. And when they got him, the thought was that outside of Vic and Domas, he could be that guy. Vic traded for LeVert. Maybe they play off each other very well. Like, I actually believe that fits pretty good, especially because LeVert can pass a little bit, but they don't have Caris LeVert.
And yeah, we just said that. I think you can have like 4 1Bs to make a 1A, if that makes sense, right? Sure. I think that's like possible, right? If you had like LeVert, Warren, Sabonis.
The Spurs had that for forever, basically.
Yeah. Well, Duncan was a 1A, but yeah.
Not at the end, right?
Okay, but then Kawhi became the 1A.
You're right.
Well, what you need is 4 1Bs, and then in a moment, the one has become a 1A. And Brody can do that. Yes, he can hit a big shot. He can hit, you know, and stuff like that. Play, have a defensive possession.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. The Spurs are an aggressive comparison. But yeah, I get what you're saying. That's absolutely true. And Sabonis is not at no fault of his struggles either, but I think his production's a little bit more consistent. I think he's kind of been stonewalled in a few recent games, but I think that Brogdon, and I always talk about this, lead ball handler really important for the success of the team. Like, when you get a good ball handler, a guy who has the ball a lot on your team who handles it and sets up plays and all that stuff, it elevates your floor so much. Well, when that guy is struggling, suddenly your floor drops, and the Pacers are dealing with that really hard right now. So I don't necessarily can't think of anything right off the top of my head that I'm like, here's an obvious low-hanging fruit, the thing the Pacers can do to get Brogdon going a little more. But I think something you just said is one thing I wanted to bring up here is he's finishing really poorly, and he goes for these reverses a lot. I think sometimes when he gets to the rim, if he would just stop and like kick it out or set something else up, I think they'd be able to get like two more points a game in the aggregate off that. He's missing a lot of layups this year. Like, I don't know what he's exactly at from the rim, but it's been really rough. I think he's got to be at a career low.
So I haven't done the math, but I imagine for his usage rate, his free throw shooting is pretty low.
51.4% at the rim before this game. That is a career low for him. So, yes. And free throw rate is what you just said?
Well, I would assume for his usage rate as a point guard, because he's going to the rim a lot, he's not getting on them, and he's not getting fouled either, which is sort of like
Yes, career high usage and career low free throw rate. So, yes.
Right. So that's what, I mean, that's a combination, right? If you can't make shots inside 3 feet, at least get the foul call, then you get the easy point, because he's a great free throw shooter, so he can get a lot of, and so I don't know why he doesn't get some calls. I don't know if it's because he goes with the left-handed layup, so it doesn't, you know, draw the contact or whatnot. Maybe he's trying to avoid some contact because he's trying to keep his body longer or whatnot. But you would hope that, you know, if he couldn't make layups, he just kind of goes in and gets fouled, kind of the way Depot kind of was recently before he got traded. Was he wasn't really the same around the rim he was, you know, pre-injury, but he went to the line and got fouled a bunch. He was going to the free throw line and getting easy points that way. And you're not quite seeing that from Brogdon, which, you know, if he was taking 5 throws a game, he'd, you know, I imagine he would see his effective field percentage up significantly higher than it is right now, which is, it's been good, but it's not near his career high.
Yeah. So I share a lot of that opinion, and I think he can be a little bit better. I think just some of it, and he has some possessions, we've talked about this before, where he just doesn't pass, right? He dribbles for like 15 seconds and misses. So I think just he's a lot. I'm not even comparing the two players here. Just something we talk about there and a lot is the balance of shooting and passing. Brogdon has like 3 possessions a game where he just don't take the shot that you take, pass, balance it, get it moving. I think that would help him a lot and help the team a lot. And that I wanted to highlight him. I think his struggles of late has been a big reason for this team really struggling and falling to 500. So we'll see if he can pick it up. And they've got 2 off days to gather before they play the KD-less Nets. I think they'll come up. Their next 5 games are pretty easy. I mean, not the Nets. The Nets are amazing. They still have James Harden and Kyrie, which, of course, the Pacers played the Rockets before the trade, so they get to play James Harden 3 or 4 times this season. But I just typed NBA schedule on that Pacers. They play the Nets, and then they have the Pistons, who we just talked about, who are struggling hard and are not very good. Then the Hawks, who are under 500, but good. Then the Bulls, then the Timberwolves, then the Rockets. They have the Depot reunion game. Rockets are kind of struggling. Spurs, who are just okay. Warriors, who are just okay. So right after this Nets game, they've got a big winnable stretch. Then Celtics, and then they have Knicks and Cavs, right?
So
in a stretch. So they've got to win the Nets game, or like a tough game in that stretch, whether it's the Hawks or the Nets or something. But B, they've got to get these easy ones.
Yeah, maybe we're being. I mean, some of the way the teams are could just be scheduling. I mean, they played a lot of games. Like, they played, what, 4 times this week. They draw the Hornets when the Hornets are playing really well. Hornets been really good as of late.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and same with the Raptors, who have struggled in the year now, have been pretty good the last, you know, 10 games or so, really have jumped their record up too. So maybe it's just some of it's scheduling. Maybe we'll see this team. We'll be sitting here in 3 weeks and be like, oh, the team is 20-15, and be like, oh, okay, they're fine. They just needed, you know, they just had a rough stretch where they played a lot of good teams and they played a lot of games and a lot of nights, which will still be that way. But just maybe that's what we're waiting for, is kind of a scheduling break in a way.
Yeah, maybe this stretch will help them out. Who knows? And then it's the All-Star break. But no game is easy. Hello, Cora. But no game is easy this season, right? Like, no team in the NBA is truly terrible, except maybe the Pistons and the Wizards. But, you know, those are the only true, like, truly awful teams. Like, no game is cupcake easy. But the Pacers, I think, will improve on 12-12 by the end of – let's say that after the Rockets game on the 20th, we'll do a weekly show that Monday. If we reassess then and they're under 500 or still 500, then maybe we've got some concerns going on. But I think they can recover a little bit. They have 2 days off and then an easier coming stretch.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think we've hit our 30-minute time limit because my dog is starting to whine and bark.
Yeah, Super Bowl's in 2 hours too, so we both and by we both, I mean you have to gotta get ready and prepare for whatever football is.
Bet in Kansas City -3. BetOnline.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON.
Yeah, I think that seems like a safe bet.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk more about the team and their upcoming week, and maybe we'll do a mailbag question or two. I haven't thought about that. I don't think we will. But we'll figure that out. So, come back tomorrow to hear about the Pacers' upcoming week and where the team is at right now. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl, and we will see you tomorrow.